again, I hope you had a great weekend, and welcome to another week, a fresh start here on the Bernie Miklas Show on YouTube. Off to a little bit of a late start today, you know, the Monday manic stuff, just scrambling around, trying to get caught up. Thanks for your support. Please subscribe if you haven't. It doesn't cost you anything. Go ahead. Go for it, man. Subscribe. Help us. Help me grow the channel. And please hit the like button, which also makes a difference. And I appreciate it very, very, very much. Thank you, of course, again, I'll say it every time, for all the comments that you leave under each video. This stuff's really good. Sometimes you make me salty, but that's okay too, right? It's all right. We can disagree and still exchange ideas, even if we both think maybe the other person's wrong. It's okay. It's you know, good stuff, actually. All right, I want to talk about something today. You know, the Cardinals haven't been in the playoffs for 2 years, hardly a scoop. You all know that. But what makes it worse is watching all these former Cardinals who were in the playoffs, or at least on teams that made the playoffs this year. And this has sort of become the alternative sport when you don't have playoff baseball with a St. Louis team in the tournament. The alternative sport is that we obsess over the former Cardinals who are, in fact, in the playoffs with other teams. Listen, I'm guilty of it. And I think I've cut back on that, but I'm guilty of it. And there's nothing wrong with it. I'm just noting that that's what this has been reduced to, not talking about how great the Cardinals are. And boy, did you see this guy hit a home run to win game 5 of the NLDS? Or anything? No. We're talking about what other players have done to help their teams once the Cardinals either traded them, let them go, whatever it may be. A partial accounting. Well, actually, I think this is a full accounting. Now, not all these guys actually played in the postseason, but they were part of teams that got them into the postseason, their new teams. And most of them, in fact, did play in the postseason. So I'm just going to go right down the list, former Cardinals. And I'm not saying all these guys are like the end-all, be-all. And I'm not saying, you know, as you'll learn when I go through the big three at the end, I'm going to be talking about, in particular, Tommy Edman, Lane Thomas, and Jack Flaherty, because those three guys get the most attention. So I'm going to go into them in greater detail. But the list of former Cardinals that were either played for teams that made the playoffs or were actually in the playoffs themselves. Marcell Ozuna, Atlanta. Jason Hayward, Houston. Paul DeJong, Kansas City. Tommy Pham, Kansas City. Michael Wacha, Kansas City. Tommy Edman, Los Angeles Dodgers. Jack Flaherty, L.A. Dodgers. Joe Kelly, L.A. Dodgers. Harrison Bader, Mets. Adam Ottavino, Mets. Jose Quintana, Mets. Luke Weaver, Yankees. Edmundo Sosa, Phillies. Donovan Solano, Padres. And I think those are the 14 names. A couple of notes before we go deeper into this. You know, Ottavino's not in the NLCS. He was bumped off the roster, the NLCS, when the Mets activated Jeff McNeil, the second baseman, all-purpose hitter from the IL. Joe Kelly, one-time Cardinals reliever, hadn't been with the Cardinals for a long time. Same with Ottavino. So in a way, I don't know why we talk about him. But if we're going to do a thorough accounting, let's include him. Joe Kelly hasn't pitched since September 27th because of a shoulder issue. It's an ongoing issue. Not available for the NLCS. Not on the roster for the NLCS. The Dodgers had hoped Kelly could return if they make it to the World Series, but that seems unlikely. I could be wrong. I'm not there. Kelly was making progress in a potential comeback until experienced a setback while throwing harder, ramping it up in early October. So those are a couple guys that we're talking about that, you know, even though their teams are in the playoffs, they're not going to participate in this round because mostly because of injuries, and not of Vino's case, because of Matt, the Mets wanted to activate another player. Now, let me go through some of the guys that are not the main attraction of this video. Harrison Bader, he's patrolling center field for the Mets, isn't starting all the games, and that's okay. He's still on the team, and he still does a good job defensively. He steals some bases. He had a good year defensively for the Mets this year, but his offense really collapsed after the All-Star break. He hit 167 after the break. On-base percentage was awful and virtually no power, so he really faded. In fact, he ended the regular season by going 3 for his last 28 over 14 games. And so far in the postseason, he is 1 for 6, but he does have 2 steals and he has scored 3 runs. And of course, the Cardinals dealt Bader to the Yankees at the trade deadline in 2022 in a deal that I think actually worked out well for both sides. because the Cardinals got Jordan Montgomery. And Bader went on that ridiculous postseason runs where, you know, where he was Mickey Mantle, just hitting home runs all over the place. Let's talk about Jose Quintana. Here's one that got away. You can make the case. The former Cardinals lefties turned in two money performances in the NL playoffs so far. He's pitched 11 scoreless innings over two starts. I did a solid job in the rotation this year for the Mets, 31 starts, 3.75 ERA. He was really outstanding for the Redbirds and, after being acquired from Pittsburgh at the deadline in 2022. And he teamed with fellow trade acquisition Jordan Montgomery that year to do a fantastic job down the stretch. The two lefties, after the deadline in 22, Montgomery and Quintana made 23 combined starts, and the Cardinals were 17-6 in those starts, and both of their ERAs were terrific. Quintana signed a two-year free agent deal with the Mets after leaving the Cardinals. It averaged $13 million per season. There's a backstory that you may or may not remember. Steve Cohen, the owner of the Mets, one of the wealthiest people in the United States, he quickly signed Quintana to that 2 years, $26 million deal after the Cardinals gave a four-year, $44 million contract to free agent lefty Steven Matz. Cohen, you see, wanted to bring Matz back to the Mets where it all started. And Cohen was under the he was under the impression that they had, if it wasn't a tentative agreement, they were like this close to a tentative agreement. In other words, Cohen thought, hey, okay, he's joining us. We're excited. This is great. He's coming back. Then he got mad. And as soon as Matz bolted and signed with the Cardinals for 4 years and $44 million, ooh, my. You know, that's when the Mets owner said, well, sign Quintana. We'll take one of their guys, even though Quintana wasn't one of their guys at that point. He was a free agent. But the point, I understand what he was thinking. And having Quintana worked out a lot better for the Mets than having the injury-prone Matz. However, in fairness, because I try to be fairness, imagine that, right? I must point out that an injury at the start of 2023 limited Quintana to 13 starts for the Mets in 2023, like I said. Let's talk about the final guy before we get to the main event, Luke Weaver. Now, I think this is a great story. I also think that anybody is going to look at Luke Weaver and say, boy, this Cardinal screwed up. Luke Weaver had been here for a long time, man. 2018 was the last time that he pitched for the Cardinals, but he was a first-round pick of the Cardinals. Had injuries, didn't quite work out, and he bounced around. Several teams had injuries, didn't work out. So the Mets signed him before 2023, and Luke Weaver became a pretty good reliever for them, really good reliever for them. And this year he was even better. He was mostly a middle guy, and he had a 2.89 ERA at 62 appearances, but he took over as the closer in late September because the Yankees were kind of like, well, what do we do now? Because their bullpen was really bad. It was really unsettled. They were having a difficult time closing out games. So manager Aaron Boone gave Luke Weaver that opportunity in late September. He had four saves, 4-for-4, didn't allow a run in those four save attempts. And so far this postseason, Weaver has locked in three saves, has not given up a run in 4 1/3. He's now 30 years old, and of course, Weaver was an important piece of the deal that brought Paul Goldschmidt to St. Louis from Arizona before the 2019 season. Now, I got to be nasty here. Let me get a little salty. It would be ridiculous for anyone to retroactively criticize that trade just because Weaver, after all these years, has seemingly finally found his niche as a major league pitcher. I'm happy for him. All right, let's get to the big three because they are the most interest as I move my notes. Have I been waving my notes in front of the screen? I get so fired up. Who knows? I probably have been. Well, at least you don't have to look at my ugly mug, right? All right, let's go to the big three. Tommy Edman, we'll start with him. Didn't play for the Cardinals at all this season, undergoing a lengthy rehab from offseason wrist surgery. The surgery took place way too late. It could have been done before the end of the regular season. I still don't know what the reason was for the latest Cardinals medical screw-up, but that's part of their tradition under this regime as well. So he had several setbacks as he was trying to make it back to the Cardinals roster, but he never played for the Cardinals this year because he was still rehabbing at the time of the trade that sent him to the Dodgers. So the Cardinals paid Edman $6 million this year not to play because he was rehabbing and unavailable. And then when they made the trade, the Dodgers picked up the remaining about $2.5 million left on his 2024 contract. The Cardinals got Eric Fetty out of this three-way trade, and the appeal there is that Fetty's under contract for next season, and he actually settled in St. Louis. He was fine. He did really well for the White Sox, and in fact, if you look at like wins above replacement, I know that's not everybody's thing, and that's cool with me. Eric Fetty had a higher wins above replacement figure, WAR, than Jack Flaherty this year, for whatever that's worth, and you may say not much. I ain't going to push back on you, but I'm just pointing it out. So Fetty gives them a rotation protection for 2025, but he's possible trade chip either this offseason or at the deadline, depending on how things are going, at the deadline in 2025. Listen, Edmund's contract for next season is a guaranteed $9.5 million. And when he joined the Dodgers this year, he hit .237, 37 regular season games, but the switch hitter had incredible power against left-handed pitching. Edmund has always struggled against right-handed pitching. He's always done well against lefties while he was batting from the right side. And when he joined the Dodgers against left-handed pitching, he hit .412 and he had four home runs and an .882 slugging percentage. Now, Tommy Edman has become even more valuable to the Dodgers now because they lost their starting shortstop, Miguel Rojas, to a season-ending injury during the NLDS. And Edman had been playing center field, somewhat of a platoon basis, but the Dodgers were grateful that they could just move him into shortstop, problem solved, no problem, let's go. We got a shortstop there. So that's worked out well for the Dodgers. And with $9.5 million, you know, to pay him next year with the Dodgers, you know, what is that? That's tip jar money. What is that? That's nothing to them. I have a theory now before we close this out on Edmund. I have a theory. I can't help but think that part of the reason for the Edmund trade was related to Heim Bloom joining the Cardinals as a consultant. We didn't know at the time what this meant. I mean, we all thought that, well, maybe he's the guy that will take over, you know, after Mo has his farewell season. As in, go, bye. My theory is this. I think that we, now that we know what we know, I think Bill DeWitt Jr. especially really coveted Heim Bloom as the successor, as the replacement to John Mozeliak. And so what does this have to do with Edmund getting traded? Because when he signed a five-year contract to serve as the baseball president of operations, beginning next offseason. So my theory is based on this. The Cardinals knew where they were headed after this season. They were going to go through a moderate rebuild, a soft rebuild, maybe a little harsher rebuild. We don't know yet. It depends on if they trade some players away. It depends how far they go with this. So the Cardinals knew if you're hiring Heim Bloom, whose first job is to fix the minor league player development system and get them up to speed, technology and facilities and instructors and coaches. But for the Cardinals to revamp or retool in 2025, they were going to cut payroll. So my theory is that 2025 would be the first year, if you will, of a somewhat of a rebuild, or actually a rebuild under Bloom, even though he's not in charge right now. But the process begins this year, and he certainly has signed off on that. So if part of 2025 is to shed, you know, excess payroll, give more opportunities to younger players, and you don't have to agree with that, but I'm saying if that was their objective, they got a head start by sending Tommy Edman to the Dodgers, because $9.5 million next season, they have players that can do what he does for the most part, although he was a great base stealer with the Cardinals, and they don't have a great base stealer now. But my point is that $9.5 million for a guy that they were unlikely to re-sign after next season. So they were able to flip him in advance and get a guy like Eric Fetty, which gives them another asset that they can do with what they want to do with, as far as either keeping him, letting him pitch all season next year, or they flip him at the trade deadline, if not sooner. So that's my theory. The Tommy Edman offload was part of the bigger plan here in St. Louis. All right, number two, let's go to Lane Thomas. Now I'm going to start to get salty. He's definitely been a breakout star for the Guardians this postseason. His 9 RBIs leads all major league hitters so far in the tournament. He helped the Guards take down Detroit in 5 games. In fact, we hit a big home run in the first game, giving them a 5-0 lead, and that was a win for the Guardians. And then his grand slam home run in game five lifted Cleveland into the ALCS matchup against the New York Yankees. Now, this is the type of thing, I'm going to just say it, this is the type of thing that automatically triggers an overreaction. There's been some really quick, emergency revisionist history among some fans, some media. I didn't say all, I said some. People suddenly second-guessing the trade that sent Thomas to the Nationals at the 2021 deadline for starting pitcher John Lester. I'm not joining your group on that one. No, heck no. In their drive to make the postseason in 2021, they were absolutely desperate for starting pitching. A lot of starting pitchers were hurt. Things were falling apart. They desperately needed a transfusion of starting pitching. And John Lester, now someone will look at for his 12 starts, like his total ERA is nothing great. You know, it was over four, well over four. But he actually did a heck of a job for that team down the stretch. After a rocky performance in his first two starts, John Lester had a 3.40 ERA in his final 10 outings. Cardinals were 7-3 in those games. So that means he absolutely contributed to the stretch run drive, or the stretch drive run, whatever you want to call it, that got them into the NL wildcard game. The fact that they didn't do anything in the NL wildcard game and losing to the Dodgers had nothing to do with John Lester. And Lane Thomas would not have been on that team anyway. So what exactly are we fussing about? Listen, you got to remember, you got to go back to 2021 and try to be fair. I know that's hard to ask at least a couple people out there. But at the time they traded Thomas, in the second half especially, because Harrison Bader, remember at the game against the White Sox up there, he went diving for a ball and cracked a couple of ribs, and he was out for a while. But once he got back, Bader in center, Carlson in right, O'Neill in left field, they were phenomenal. And their second half numbers as a group were phenomenal. So the Cardinals had like a top five major league outfield in terms of offensive production after the All-Star break. So I'm not going to sit here and, again, just revise history that I know is dishonest. And at that point, to say, well, see, the Cardinals, they had to know that O'Neill and Carlson and Bader, that wasn't really them. They were going to be flops. No, you can't predict that. I was excited, and I know many of you were too, during that 17-game winning streak late in the year that put the Cardinals in the driver's seat and then some. O'Neill, Carlson, and Bader were phenomenal, and I have the numbers, which I'm not going to read if I trust you to believe me, but their numbers after the All-Star break that year were incredible, and they were all young guys still, right? All three guys were young, and they were emerging as core players. The 2021 season for all three of them, especially after the break, was really, really, really good. There was no reason to assume that all three of those guys would just almost simultaneously start to go down, 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 down. They did. But I don't blame the Cardinals for what they were thinking at the time. Well, we have our starting outfield set for next year and beyond. And Lane Thomas, at the time of the trade, was in AAA at the Memphis Redbirds after he had batted 104 for the Cardinals in 32 games, and he was trying to recover at AAA. And the Nationals said, well, yeah, we'll take him. We'd like to take him. Cardinals looked at him as he was expendable, and at the time he was. Again, I refuse to revise history in a dishonest fashion. I ain't going to do it, okay? Everyone else, you can do what you want. I'm telling you what my standards are. Now, listen, since moving on from St. Louis, Thomas has slugged .434 in 468 big league games. That's good. It's really good. Tip of the cap, as we like to say. But it's not the whole story. He strikes out a lot. He doesn't draw many walks. During the 2024 regular season, he hit, combining Nationals and the Guardians, he hit .237. His slugging percentage was right at .400. He, using the metrics, he was basically league average offensively. And after joining the Guardians, Thomas batted .209, and he had a 35% strikeout rate, which is really, really bad. Not Nolan Gorman bad, but getting up there. Since the start of the 2022 season, because Thomas really tore it up when he joined the Nationals after the Lester trade. But since the 2022 season, even though he's had some really good runs and he has shown some pop, Lane Thomas is like 3% above the league average offensively. Would that be better than most of the outfielders that the Cardinals put out there? Well, yeah, but that's also irrelevant because the Cardinals had every solid reason to believe that they had their outfield set in 2021 and 2022 and maybe even beyond. And Thomas absolutely was expendable. And you can argue otherwise because I know, you know, there's just people. Listen, man, I don't like John Mozeliak and the job he's done either. But anything that can just put like an extra big fat blemish on John Mozeliak to disparage his record, you're going to go for it because you hate him so much. I understand. It's human nature. But, you know, I'm looking at sort of Thomas up and down. And he's not a kid. He's going to be 30 years old next year. He has shown that pop. And that's one thing. And we have seen it this postseason. And I'm happy for him. But there's no reason for me. You do what you want. No legitimate reason for me to go back and pretend that trading Lane Thomas at that time was some colossal mistake. And I don't think any of you said that at the time. You might have said, well, I don't know. Maybe he'll turn into something. Whatever. But, you know, the stuff I hear now, you know, reading social media, every time Thomas gets a hit or does something big, you'd think he's the next Joe DiMaggio or something. Please, get a grip. The Cardinals needed pitching. Lester filled the bill. If Mozeliak hadn't gotten pitching at that deadline and the Cardinals would have frittered it away, which was unlikely because after the deadline, that's when their offense kicked in for that tremendous run, 17 straight wins. But if they had failed to make the playoffs and it came out later that Mo turned down a Lane Thomas for John Lester deal, well, the haters would have hated and hated and hated and hated and hated. Now, not after thinking about Lane Thomas all that much, and now they're retroactively hating the trade. And let me tell you something. Do the Cardinals front office, do they stink at evaluating outfielders? Of course they do. I've written about it 20,000 times. I've hollered about it 20,000 times. Slight exaggeration there. There have been a lot of mistakes, really dumb mistakes, but Lane Thomas does not make my list of dumb, idiotic trades. Sorry. I have more of a sense of fairness to state something like that. I'm just not going to go there. All right, let's get to maybe my favorite candidate. Number three, Jack Flaherty, because some of the feedback I've gotten, even under the videos, I'm thinking that some Cardinals fans are like trying to raise money to build a monument to Jack now. Okay. This one makes me giggle. When the Cardinals traded Flaherty to the Orioles at the 2023 deadline, I don't recall one person. I'm sure there was one or 10 people out there. I don't recall one person out there who said, wow, can you believe the Cardinals are doing something this idiotic? They're trading Jack Flaherty? Oh, they're going to regret this. No one said that. No one said that. And if you're claiming now that you said that at the time, all due respect, my friend, but I'm going to have to ask you to submit to a polygraph, okay? Because nobody said that at the time. And the thing of it is, why would anybody say that at the time? Cardinals fans were way, way, way down on Jack Flaherty. I think he was one of the most unpopular Cardinals over the last several seasons. And I can understand why. After his excellent 2019 campaign at age 23, he was fourth in the National League in Cy Young voting. He never really came close to approaching that again. Injuries were a huge issue. Hey, pitchers break down. I'm not saying it's his fault, but they break down. And that's part of the Jack Flaherty story. He had too many mediocre performances, which was another issue. And his role, and this is one I absolutely will always point out, Jack Flaherty played a major role in undermining Wilson Contreras to the first year as a catcher, less than 2 months into the job, because Jack Flaherty and others wanted to concoct an excuse to justify their own failures as pitchers. That's about as weak as it gets, okay? And Jack Flaherty and others did a lot of harm to Wilson Contreras' rep in St. Louis. And some of that still sticks because you hear it all the time from the Contreras haters out there. So Jack Flaherty never seemed to get his head together. And you know, I do understand that we remember it. Look, I used to be president of Jack Flaherty Fan Club, but that's not a lifetime membership. It's not a lifetime term in office. This is a performance game. But just because you have one great season, that doesn't mean, oh, we got to keep him forever. Oh, he's a Cardinal for life. We all know that Jack Flaherty, even if he was worthy of a sizable free agent contract after 2023, he wasn't going to sign back with the Cardinals. He was going to have other options. His goal all along was to pitch for the Dodgers, and here he is. And by the way, he was phenomenal in game one of the NLCS, just phenomenal. Seven innings, two hits, no runs, and that fastball, he's spinning that thing. It's just wicked. And I want to get into that here in a minute. So give me time to do this. Let's just retrace Jack Flaherty a little bit. In the 2020 COVID season, he was used every so often. It was kind of a weird plan they had set up. Maybe they didn't want to overdo it in 2020 because he pitched so much in 2019. I still don't understand it. You have others in the media that will be happy to explain that to you. I think it's bogus, quite frankly. So he had a 4.91 ERA in 2020. In 2021, Jack Flaherty missed 103 days with injuries. In 2022, he missed 139 days with injuries. He was healthy in 2023, except he didn't pitch well. He did not pitch well at all. He had a 4.43 ERA for the Cardinals with an average strikeout rate and a very big problem of handing out too many walks. So the Cardinals flipped him to the Orioles at the deadline. You remember that. And I'll talk about more about that in a minute. But he was so bad in Baltimore, after his first seven starts, Jack Flaherty had a 7.11 ERA, 7.11 ERA, and they pulled him from the rotation. They banished him to the bullpen. If we combine Flaherty's ERA with the Cardinals and his work with the Orioles, he had a 5 ERA last year, 5 for both teams combined. And an average strikeout rate, nothing special at all, average, league average, and a walk rate that soared over 10%. The Orioles traded for him and put him in the bullpen because they couldn't stand watching him pitch. I would say every Cardinals fan who's honest couldn't stand watching him pitch here in the final days, even the final couple of years. And then here's another one. If anybody out there is trying to claim that the Cardinals didn't get much for Flaherty, I would say, yeah. What did you think the market value would be? He's a walk year guy that was on the way to having a 5.00 ERA for the season, and he kept walking hitters left and right. And then he's always an injury risk. He's got a terrible history with injuries. What did you think you were going to get for him, right? Like, tell me. I'm just curious. Like, their top prospect or something? No, they didn't get much for him, but I didn't expect them to get much. And maybe you could say they could have done a little better. That's fair. But I didn't really think that that trade would command much in return. To his credit, for 2024, before 2024, Flaherty pulled himself together. He strengthened his shoulder. He began putting more spin on his four-seamer. He was highly motivated after signing a one-year contract with the Tigers, and he really wanted to go to the Tigers, and he was smart to go to the Tigers. And I'll get to that in a minute. But overall this season, you know, the Tigers smartly flipped him at the deadline because he's going to be a free agent again. He only signed a one-year deal with Detroit. But if you combine the stats in Detroit and Los Angeles Dodgers, Flaherty had the 13th best starting pitching ERA this year, 3.17. And that was 13th, as I said. And he had the fourth best strikeout rate, 30% strikeout rate this year in total. That was fourth, slightly behind Sonny Gray, the Cardinals. Now, here's what you can rip the Cardinals for, okay? And this would be in line with what I've been preaching, for a long time now. If you want to rip the Cardinals for anything, here's what's fair. Flaherty went to Detroit for a couple of reasons. The biggest draw by far was this. The Tigers, the way they work with pitchers, the way that they can make pitchers better, they're really, really good at that. They're more advanced than many teams out there in the majors. They have a biomechanics program that can enhance a pitcher's delivery, including his stride, his arm action, to get more power on his fastball. In fact, you know, Jack Flaherty's fastball went 91, sometimes 92 to 95 plus this year because of the work that the Tigers did and the tools that they gave Jack Flaherty to make him a better pitcher. And to his credit, he took that advice. He put those things in practice. He began like really spinning that four-seam fastball hard, and he had a really outstanding season. So if you want to rip the Cardinals, that's what you rip them for. But we've all been, most of us, I know I have been ripping them for this for a long time. What do you hear me say all the time about, well, it's a situation where they've really fallen behind. And I was way ahead of the curve on this, not just the minor leagues, not just the lack of instructions and technology and facilities and all the tools that young hitters need to be, you know, really primed and ready for the major leagues. The Cardinals are way behind at that level. And I want to thank quite a few of you who have mentioned to me like, hey, I remember you were the only one talking about how the Cardinals had, they didn't have much of a staff compared to other major league teams. Their technology and their tools and their equipment and the number of people they had behind the scenes working on pitching, they were way behind the times in compared to major league operations. So this just shows us once again just how far behind the Cardinals were in lacking the technological advancements to maybe make a guy like Jack Flaherty available, make him better. Like they didn't have the biomechanics program or the technology or the analytics, really, really smart, sharp analytics people that could say, hey, well, here, he needs to throw his fastball a lot more and, you know, get the biomechanics working because I think there's another 3-4 miles an hour in that fastball. So St. Louis is getting better at this. Derek Gould wrote a heck of a story Monday talking about Dusty Blake and some of the things they found to make some of their pitchers better. And it was really good stuff. And it's legit. And I think when we talk about young pitchers, all pitchers having more tools, more assistance in terms of being the best they can be or improving when they hit a rut, we're going to get next level tools, so to speak, when Heim Bloom takes over. But like I said, anybody saying, well, the Cardinals should, I said at the time, they never should have traded Flaherty. Yeah. Well, again, let me see if I can set up that polygraph for you. Okay. Cause you know, you didn't say that. That'll do it for today. I just wanted to cover this stuff. I think it's fascinating. And I look forward to reading your comments on this. Time is short today. I doubt that I'll be back later, but you never know. Thank you, though. Thank you, thank you, thank you, as always, for watching the Bernie Show channel here on YouTube.